Welcome to episode 18 of Frog Fever, a Big 12 basketball podcast brought to you by killerfrogs.com. My name is Davis Wilson. With me, as always, is Nick Giramani. We've got a great episode, a pretty eventful week in the Big 12 overall. TCU, an eventful week for them as well. We'll get into that a little later. We'll start with the Big 12, though. Nick, how are you doing, and what are your thoughts on where things stand with the conference right now?
Yeah, I'm excited. This is March. You know, we got so much to talk about. Loaded episode, awards, predictions, brackets. I'm hyped for it.
Yeah. And we have a big guest joining us for the TCU segment of this podcast. Jamie Plunkett, who all Frog fans are very familiar with, is joining the pod later on to talk TCU and a preview of what their Big 12 tournament run could look like, all that stuff. We'll get into all of it.
Yeah, that should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, big thanks to him for coming on. Before he comes on, though, let's just get into some Big 12 general stuff. I thought we would start by giving our kudos to the regular season champion, Houston, who completely dominated the season. I think it won its last nine games after losing that game at Kansas. Just a masterclass of a season and their first year in this conference. Pretty massive year for them.
Yeah, shout out Houston. Like, they found ways to win, and I think they got better and better throughout the season. People forget after they lost to us, they were 1-2 in the conference, and it was a little bit of like, oh, how can they adjust? But I mean, they figured it out. We've been on it for a while. They've been the best team, and it was clear. Jamal Shedd, we'll get into awards later, Big 12 Player of the Year. They made it look easy, and they lost three rotational pieces throughout the year, and Arsenault, Tugler, and Ramon Walker. So, like, to be able to respond like that and just have guys step up so fast is a kudos to Kelvin Sampson, Big 12 Coach of the Year as well. Yep. Sharp stepped up, Dunn, you know, J1, Cryer, and Shedd are, like, the big three there, and France, like, they just have dudes that step up, and, yeah, Houston was by far the best team in the conference. We probably crowned them champs, I don't know, three or four episodes ago. So yeah, they officially did it, and they're as good as anyone right now, and one of the favorites to win the whole thing for sure.
Yeah. So Houston finishes 28-3 overall, 15-3 in the Big 12, and they cap it all off on Saturday with a 30-point win over Kansas at Houston. I mean, there's not a better win in the conference. That's one of the best wins in the country. Granted, Kansas was dealing with some injury stuff. Dickinson went out early. McCuller went out early. But, man, 30-balling Kansas is some serious stuff. And I'm curious when the last time something like that has happened to a Bill Self squad.
Yeah, it might have been last year when TCU came into Allen and won by, like, 20-plus. But, yeah, I mean, even before those guys went out, it was – I don't know. They started the game 22-3 or something crazy like that.
Yep.
So it was just a beat down from the start. And I think they took a little bit of it personally because they lost at Kansas. So just having that on the back, and they just keep, as I said before, you don't think they can get better, and they keep doing it. Holding a Kansas team to 46 is unheard of. They're one of the best defenses in college. I don't want to say of all time, but I think their stats back it up to where you can look at them as being a generational type defense under Sampson. Mm-hmm. So yeah, they're scary. They're scary, yeah. Scary.
They're really scary. Like you said, Shedd was player of the year for the Big 12. I think he was defensive player of the year as well. And Sampson won coach of the year. They cleaned up when it comes to awards. And I guess we can just kind of get into the award stuff now if you want.
Yeah.
And kind of go over it. They came out yesterday, I think. We got some interesting picks. A lot of it was kind of what I was expecting, but what are your thoughts on the team? We'll start with first team. What do you think of those five guys?
Yeah, first team. The biggest shock to me was probably Dessou in here. I would say Shedd was a lock. He was the only unanimous guy, which is kind of surprising. Dickinson was pretty easy. But those last three, I would say Tame and Lipsy deserved it. I am obviously biased, but like Emmanuel Miller being the only player to score double digits in all 18 Big 12 games and showing up every game like he did, I would have probably put him over a Dessua or McCullough. McCullough just because he was injured a lot of the year. Like if he stayed healthy, he would have been a unanimous, but he just missed such a big chunk and Kansas wasn't as dominant as they usually are. And Eman was probably more consistent than a Dessua on an every night basis. But it nothing crazy shocked me. I might have even put LJ Cryer over a McCullough. You know, if you're the leading scorer on the best team in the country, I think you should get more nods and maybe even like a Keyshawn Gilbert get in the mix too over to Sumer color. But nothing crazy shocked me. But if I were making a team, I would probably put Cryer and Eman in there over McCullough and Dessua.
So just to go over for the listener, it's Jamal Shedd, Taman Lipsey, Kevin McCullough, Dylan Dessua, and Hunter Dickinson. Dessua was the one. I think he, I mean, obviously, super good player, came in. He was hurt for a long time. He came to Texas when they were, or he came back when Texas was struggling a little bit. We didn't quite know what Texas was, and they end up getting in a real rhythm, and they finished the year really well, and he's a big reason why. Let's see, McCullough. Yeah, I think McCullough is interesting because if he's healthy, he's probably up there challenging Shedd for player of the year just because of the numbers he had. And but he missed a lot of games, so I thought there was a chance he might get left off, but I think he's deserving when you just look at the numbers. And then, like, Max Asmus, I thought could have been on there. Obviously, Emmanuel Miller, we've talked about it on this podcast a lot, how we thought he should be. But this is a stacked, a loaded conference. And all those guys are very deserving. The second team is where Emmanuel Miller ends up. And I don't have the full list of those guys. I'm trying to find it, but
I got it right here.
Yeah. Let me know who the rest of those guys are.
So it was A. Smith from Texas, Ray J. Dennis from Baylor, L.J. Cryer from Houston, Keyshawn Gilbert from Iowa State, and then E-Man, as you said, rounding that out, which I personally am fine with. I think all those players, you can probably make an argument for first team to, like, Ray J. being that Baylor facilitator. I mean, he's one of the best guards just from a facilitating standpoint and true point guards as there is. Keyshawn leading Iowa State in points, and L.J. too. Like, it's pretty even from every single, like, you can make the argument for Asmus for, you know, leading Texas being just as important as the Sioux for that team and hitting big shots over and over again. So I think it's pretty fluid other than Shedd being the lock. Like, you could probably make an argument, maybe Dickinson too, being kind of a lock at first team. You could probably make an argument for all eight of those guys being fluid in that 8-9. So I don't really, for the first and second team, so I don't really see an issue much that I have a problem with the second team. How about you?
No, I thought it was fine. I thought I agree with you. Like, it could have been any combination of those. It was like those 10 guys you knew were probably going to be in there. And it could have been any combination. I think, like you said, Shedd and Dickinson and Lipsey are probably locks for the first team. And then it kind of gets fluid where you can go in and out on either team. But I thought they did a pretty good job. Obviously, you know, as TCU guys, it would have been cool to see Miller on the first team. And I think he was brilliant all year. He probably did enough. It's just such a loaded conference, so you can't get too mad at that. But
yeah, it's tough too, because you have like the last couple of years, we've had preseason guys. And I think Mike Miles was even preseason player of the year last year. And Eman was preseason first team this year that had expectations and kind of met them, kind of didn't, but they've been so close to reaching that first team that it's just it's tough seeing it back-to-back years. Like the preseason first team was LJ Cryer, Hunter Dickinson, DeJuan Harris, Emmanuel Miller, and Max Asmus. So the only guy that actually made it out of the group was Dickinson. Which is kind of interesting, because a lot of those guys had great years, but it just proved how other guys stepped up. And Jamal Shedd not even being on that list is crazy to look back on because he's probably going to win Defensive Player of the Year in all of college basketball, and he was by far, I think, the lock to win Player of the Year in the Big 12.
Yeah, I agree. Let's get into like the individual. We mentioned some of them. Shedd wins Player of the Year and Defensive Player of the Year.
Yeah.
Baylor's Jacoby Walter wins Freshman of the Year. I think that he's very deserving. He was tough
Yeah.
all year. Newcomer of the Year, Hunter Dickinson.
Yeah,
Yeah,
those are all
again,
pretty
pretty
chalk.
straightforward. Sixth Man of the Year, Jackson Robinson of BYU. That's a pretty good pick, I think.
Yeah, I think Layton Love probably would have won that out of Baylor if he didn't get hurt, but he's been out, I don't know, the past six games or something. So, but Jackson Robinson, I think, was the leading scorer at BYU, and BYU had an unbelievable year, so you can't be mad at that.
Dylan Dessou, most improved, and then coach of the year was Kelvin Sampson, as we said before.
Yeah.
Any of those, you know, do you think they got wrong? Would you like to see any other guy in that category and any of those
Yeah.
categories?
I think for, yeah, I think most improved is probably right, you know, because Dessou was a role player on last year's team and he had that such a good Big 12 tournament. So he was probably like, I don't even know if they had odds, but he was probably the odds on favorite to get most improved because he showed those flashes late in the year and with Tibby out and some of those guys leaving, that opportunity was there for him and he seized it once he came back from injury early in the year. But for coach of the year, I might have liked this. Kelvin Sampson, obviously unbelievable, and we talked so highly about him in Houston all year. I might have liked to see TJ Otzelberger win that though. I think Iowa State, with their talent level, they were not supposed to be nearly as good as they finished. Like Houston was picked at the either 1-2 in the Big 12, them in Kansas. So people knew Houston would be good. There was obviously a little bit of a wonder how what the transition would be from the AAC to the Big 12. But yeah, obviously I'm not super mad at Samson, but I think Otzelberger taking such a team that didn't have a crazy amount of talent, making Lipsy a first round or a first team guy, Keyshawn developing a second team guy, and you know, you have Mochilovich, the freshman. They just have he's developed and it's defense and it's scheme, and I would have liked to see him probably get the nod for talent. And I also think Mark Pope
Yeah, I was gonna mention
did a
Pope.
great job too, yeah, to because nobody thought, again, even probably worse than Iowa State, that BYU would have any success. They didn't have the success to be like you know, like Iowa State level good, finishing second in the conference. But what he did with that BYU roster, because they really didn't get any crazy like new tech, like a lot of the guys were there last year, and especially in today's game of college basketball. So just to take that to a whole new level is pretty remarkable.
Yeah, it kind of brings up the question, like, what even is Coach of the Year, right? Like, is it the coach
Yeah.
that coaches the best team, or is it the coach that exceeds expectations? Because if it's that, it's probably Pope or Otzelberger. I thought
Yeah.
Pope was pretty incredible. The way that they finished, was wild. We joke about it, but they were like number one in net early on
Yeah.
in the year.
When it first
And
dropped, yeah.
yeah, it just he did a great job. Otzelberger, I'm a big fan of him, his. He did a great job. But yeah, I mean, Kelvin Sampson was unbelievable. Like you said, they were missing a lot of guys, and they still went, what, 28-3,
Yeah.
and by far the most challenging conference in the country. So, and then the way he finishes, stomping Bill Self by 30 points, like, it just, I don't know. It's hard to say that it should have gone to anyone else, but there, you know, it just, it's all about kind of what you consider Big 12 coach, I mean, coach of the year to mean, you know. I thought all three of those guys were
Yeah.
very deserving.
No, for sure. It is a
Even like a McCaslin, I mean, probably not at the
Yeah.
top, but he turned a Texas Tech team around really quickly. But yeah, I think it was those three guys, and at the end of the day, the right guy probably won it, but Otzelberger and Pope are, I mean, you could argue either one of those guys, and I would not be upset with that.
Yeah, it is one of those funny discussions because when you look at it, it's like, just give it to the guy with the best record. You know what I mean? Because they did the technically the best job. Yeah, again, I'm not mad at Samson, but he's one of the best coaches in college basketball. And yeah, he definitely earned it, I would say. I would probably just give him out to TJ just because I probably look at it as more as expectation before the season and where you took it to. Because when you look at both teams on talent, like you knew Shedd was a stud, you knew Kreider was a stud, Jalen Roberts was a proven guy. So you knew they had probably had more talent, but they also were better than Iowa State. So I guess you give that nod head to head. But
Yeah, it's
yeah,
tough.
the other thing I was, I tweeted of it too. I thought Micah Peavy, obviously biased, but was snubbed from all defensive. I just think you put him on any person in the, on like, he guards the top defenders every single game. And he's just done such a good job, and how everybody talks about him, his length is he can guard 1 through 5. I thought he should have been deserving of that. Obviously, I've watched him more than any other team, so I don't know for sure, but I was a little sad not to see him get that nod there. But other than that, I'm not crazy mad at any of the picks. Shout out Peavy and Jameer. We'll probably get more into it in TCU section for getting honorable mention, but those guys are great all year too. And yeah, not crazy mad about any of the selections.
Yeah, I agree. I thought most of them were pretty good. And yeah, PV to me is still one of the best on ball defenders in the country. His defensive IQ is as good as I think as good as it gets. So it would have been nice to see him get some recognition there. But honorable mention is a big deal as well, especially in this conference. So good for him and Jameer. But yeah, the coach talk, we had some coach talk earlier. It's a perfect segue into what we're going to get into next. Today, a little rumor on Twitter going around about Porter Moser at Oklahoma wanting out and wanting DePaul. What do you, first of all, just your first initial reactions to seeing this news about Porter Moser?
Yeah, you brought this to my attention, and instantly it's shock because, yeah, OU isn't like the best basketball program by any means, but DePaul is in the midst of a 3-win season, and they're probably in the worst position of any Power Six team, I would say.
Don't
So
forget
it is
about
crazy.
Missouri. 0-18 SEC play
Oh
Missouri.
yeah,
Please don't forget about Missouri.
shout out the Tigers. But yeah, I mean both winless in conference play. I guess it's a battle there. But yeah, it's definitely interesting because it seemed like a dumb move and random off the start. But then you look into it, he grew up in Illinois. He went to Creighton, so he's got that Big East blood in him, and he obviously coached at Loyola Chicago, notably making those sick runs. So he obviously just loves Chicago. And I think the rumor was with that too is that DePaul was willing to pay the buyout of $6.5 million, which was be a big notable plus for him, I would say. But especially being with in TCU's position, it does make you wonder because OU had such a great start to the year, and they just kind of, I don't want to say collapsed, but they went downhill pretty fast. And I wonder if he had, his foot out the door a little bit once he started seeing Stubblefield fired and DePaul just in that position where they needed a coach, and he kind of lost focus a little bit, but you never know. I mean, that's just regular fan assumption. And right now, as we talk on Monday, it is all just social media rumors, but where there's smoke, there's fire, and there's a lot of smoke. So I'm very interested to see how this plays down the next couple of days, if how, like, when he'll choose it, because if it gets out enough, like, he puts him in an awkward position to coach this Oklahoma team, knowing that he's out of there and not fully bought in right now.
I mean, that's probably, well, that's a tournament team. Like, they're they've got a game in 2 days against TCU. So it is really interesting that we're already, you typically hear these coaching rumors after your team is done. And it's odd that it's happening right now. But I'll say, like, it's the Big East. DePaul's terrible, but I've always kind of wanted to see them succeed. And this would be a huge hire for them, obviously. But I think more than anything, this is like a question about what exactly is going on in Oklahoma, because I don't know. I saw a rumor that Moser was, I mean, this is, again, we have to say this is all rumors on Twitter. So there's, I mean, and people are acknowledging, people who would know are acknowledging these rumors, but they are just rumors. I saw a rumor on Twitter that he basically came to OU and said, we need NIL, better facilities, or I'm going to go to DePaul. And the rumor is that he was bluffing, and OU, called his bluff. And now they're saying that there's a more than good chance that Porter leaves for DePaul. But it's concerning because there's stuff that's going on at Oklahoma across the board, all sports. Like, there is some really weird football stuff, NIL. Earlier, there's a big transfer, offensive lineman, Caden Green, who actually came to Missouri from Oklahoma because of this. There's some weird stuff about NIL going on. And it just kind of makes you wonder about what's going on in Oklahoma, because going from Oklahoma, soon to be SEC Oklahoma, to DePaul, literally probably the worst team in the country, Power Six, is a crazy move. And again, he's going home, or he would be going home. He had a ton of success at Loyola Chicago, but Moser was like a kind of a huge get for Oklahoma when it happened, and there was a lot of expectations there. And I don't think it's been enough time to really judge him. I mean, this team, I think, probably did about how they're supposed to do. They're going to be in the tournament. They won some big games, but it is a little weird about, I mean, now, first some football NIL stuff. Now this, who knows what's true, but it is a little weird what's going on with Oklahoma, a school that should not be having problems like these.
Yeah, again, such a big brand in OU, and just as you noted, Moser, when he was at Loyola Chicago with those runs, Final Four run and everything, he was one of the most sought after coaching prospects at that time when he decided he wanted to get out of there. So it'd be a massive get for DePaul if this was true, and you tend to
Huge.
believe with all the stuff going on that it's true. And he's done obviously not an outstanding job, but he's probably met expectations, I would say, with an OU basketball team that really hasn't had crazy success since like when Buddy Hield was there, it's stuff like that. But yeah, very interesting to see how it plays out, and especially in the TCU game because we open with them. So if the spiral is out of control, it's probably a plus for TCU.
And we'll get into, when Jamie's on, we'll ask him about, how he thinks that affects. I mean, hearing this as an Oklahoma player has to be a little weird. You're about to play,
Yeah,
the
exactly.
biggest games of this whole season are in front of you. So, it is pretty interesting. This is out now. This is a really underrated time of year because of all the coaching stuff. Obviously, there's postseason play going on, but the coaching carousel is always fun. You kind of wonder what else will happen in the Big 12. Like, there's obviously some candidates who some teams who may want to go elsewhere, but we won't get into that right now. But yeah, it's a rumor that I was not at all expecting to see today. That's for sure.
Yeah, 100%. And you do wonder as a player, like, you want to be completely bought into this time of the year. And we saw when Eddie was a little bit out last year, it can really hurt a team. So, and let alone your coach not being fully in the door, it obviously plays a difference. So it's going to be super interesting to see.
It's weird, but good for DePaul if they can pull that off. And there's certainly some questions with Oklahoma if this is all true. But let's move on. Let's get into what is right in front of us. We've got the Big 12 tournament this weekend in
We got a
Kansas City.
bracket.
We got a bracket. We've got all
I
it's
just like looking at it.
bracket season. Games start tomorrow, so Tuesday at, let's see, the first game's at 11:30 between Oklahoma State and UCF. There are two games tomorrow, and then things kick off from there. TCU, we'll get into this later again, but TCU plays at 2 o'clock on Wednesday. Let's just go through this bracket. We'll kind of make our
Yeah.
picks, I guess, and kind of see where we end up here. I don't know the numbers. Do you know how often the regular season champ wins the conference tournament? Do you know?
I do not know.
That'd be interesting to
Last
see.
year, I don't think Texas won the regular season, right? But they won the Big 12. So it's definitely interesting. I know Kansas won. Didn't Kansas win it with the regular season and the tournament 2 years ago with the
think
Natty
that's
team,
I think that's
Abaji.
right. Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah,
It
I'd
feels
be
the
interested to
same.
see.
Yeah. Yeah, let's just go through it then. So
All right, you want to start? Pokes, Knights.
the first round Tuesday at 11:30, Oklahoma State, UCF. I'm going UCF here. UCF just beat TCU. I've always kind
Yeah.
of been a, I mean, not always, but this season I've kind of liked this UCF team sneakily because of the defense they have and some of the fun guys. They're obviously not a good team, but they have a chance to win big games and they're better than Oklahoma State. So I'm going to go UCF here.
Yeah. I mean, TCU just saw what UCF can do to a team defensively, and Darius Johnson and Sellers are a killer duo, as TCU just saw again. Yeah, there's a better team than the Pokes, and they probably have more to play for because, you know, they could be an NIT team here. So, and I do wonder if the Pokes lose, what would happen with the future of Boynton, but
Yeah,
yeah,
that's
I'd go
interesting.
UCF here.
Yeah. All right. Let's see. All right. Next at 2 o'clock on Tuesday, tomorrow afternoon, is West Virginia, number 14 seed of West Virginia, and number 11 seed Cincinnati. Again, to me, West Virginia and Oklahoma State are clearly the two worst teams in this conference. Cincinnati at one point was probably going to make the tournament. They certainly had a more than positive chance to make the tournament. Obviously, they're probably gonna have to win out now to get in, but they're a good team. I'm not gonna go in with an upset quite yet. I am gonna go Cincinnati here.
Yeah, I'm gonna go Cincinnati too. I think that's what you just said. I don't want to spend too much time on this game, but yeah, West Virginia and Oklahoma State were the two worst teams. So, I would just knock into the top 12 right here.
Yeah. All right, let's go back up to UCF now because we both had UCF. UCF plays BYU on this game would be on Wednesday at 11:30. What are your thoughts on this game here?
Yeah. I like what BYU, I think BYU's offense is enough to carry them past this UCF team. I think it's a sleeper matchup, but
Yeah,
if I were to
it's been
choose, yeah, I'd ride BYU on. I don't think it's
okay.
too crazy of a pick.
This is I'm very tempted to do a little upset pick here, honestly, just because upsets are going to happen. BYU is already very squarely in the tournament. It's definitely interesting because it's that really good offense versus a really good defense. Just for fun, I'm going to go UCF. Pick them.
I like that. I
Yeah.
like that.
All
Yeah,
right.
I think it could happen too. It's a battle of good defense, good offense. So if that matchup is a thing, I think it could definitely be an interesting one.
Yeah, and a big win at TCU, and then you get off on a good foot against Oklahoma State. I think there's a chance they just, are feeling good, and BYU's beatable. So I'll go there.
Yeah.
I'm not super confident in it, but I'll go there just for the fun of it
Yeah.
all. All right.
Okay, so now we got Horned Frogs, Sooners.
Yep, Horned Frog
Yeah,
Sooners.
we'll obviously talk about this game in more depth soon, but I don't think it's a shock. I'm gonna ride with TCU. We just
Yeah.
talked about Moser being out of the way, and I just think straight up that TCU is a better team, and they already beat him earlier in the regular season, so it gives me no reason to pick against him. TCU's back fully healthy now too, so I think they win this one and kind of seal their tournament bid.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm picking TCU here. Not even really a homer pick. I just like them better than Oklahoma. They beat Oklahoma earlier in the season. Oklahoma, has to deal with all the outside rumors. However,
Yeah.
that affects the team. I'm sure it affects them at some point. But TCU, on the bubble right now, I would say they're probably in regardless. I think though, to be comfortable, you want to win.
Yeah.
You want to win this game, and I think they're going to want to after a unfortunate loss to UCF.
Cool.
All right.
All right, so what's next up here? We got K-State, Texas. This is an interesting one
Yeah,
because
this is pretty.
K-State. Yeah, if we're looking at recent K-State's coming off the win of the week, really, of upsetting Iowa State, which was massive for them to even keep a little bit of tournament hopes alive. I still think they would have to win a couple, but But they're running into Texas, which is one of the hottest teams in the conference too. You know, Texas won 3 out of 5. They just beat OU. I think, as we talked about in last week's pod and the last couple pods, I'm gonna ride with Texas, just based on them just being a better team all year. And yeah, K-State's coming off that big win, so I think this is gonna be one of the best games of not opening, I guess, but that first real round. So it could go either way, but I'm gonna ride with the Longhorns.
I'm gonna ride with you here. I'm picking UT to beat Kansas State. I think UT is just has figured it out right now. They're rolling, they're playing really well. They handle Oklahoma. Like you said, I'm going to pick them. They're hot. So I'm going to ride with them. All right. Next up, Tuesday,
Cincy,
Wednesday night. Yeah. This
Kansas.
would be Cincy, Kansas for both of us because we both have the same picks. You go first.
Cool. I think this is a more interesting game than people think. I think Cincy's been frisky, but they've just been looking for that big win. But they've also been falling out like later in the year. They are coming off a big win at West Virginia, but what does that really matter, as we've seen what West Virginia has done? So I'm probably going to stick with Kansas just not to get too crazy and dumb, because I do think Dickinson and McCullough will still play. You know, Dickinson had that shoulder thing, but I feel like once the Big 12 tournament comes around, they'll play, and just their starting five talent alone will probably just get them past to Cincinnati.
I have my concerns about Kansas, but I'd be crazy to say that they're not going to win at least one of these games in the tournament.
Yeah.
Man, it's Bill Self. I'm picking Kansas. I'm picking
Yeah.
Kansas. All right,
All
the
right.
quarterfinals on Thursday. So my bracket looks like it, my bracket is so okay. We'll just go through this. Game seven of the tournament would be playing the 4 seed Texas Tech. For me, this is Texas Tech UCF. I will be taking Texas Tech here. UCF's run for me runs out right here. Texas Tech playing well. They get the 4 seed, which I'm sure not a lot of people expected them to do. I mentioned McCaslin earlier. I think he's done a great job. I'm picking Texas Tech there.
Yeah, I'm wondering, do they reseed in the conference tournament? So would like UCF play like a
Oh,
Houston
that's a
if
good
they
question.
advance?
Actually, that's a good question. I don't, that would determine a lot about picking this bracket.
Yeah,
Yes.
I think it might.
I think you're
I
right,
have pretty much
actually.
chalk so far, so
I think you're right.
mine just kind of lines up.
Yeah, you might be right about that. All right. Well, then if you're chalk, I'll just pick from yours.
Okay, cool. I'm gonna go. So mine's BYU Tech, and I think I'm gonna ride with the Cougars. Kind of my first little upset here, but I just like what this BYU has done all year. We've been kind of on them from the start, and I think their defense has improved a little bit, to make it even more respectable. And that offense is so lethal, as we're saying that. I think Mark Posting makes the Final Four in this one.
Well, since I picked BYU to lose earlier to UCF. So I'm going to take Texas Tech here. I just said all the things I like about Texas Tech. We'll just
Yeah.
carry that over. I still like Texas Tech to move on for me.
Yeah. Okay. So TCU Houston here in the next one, in my bracket. I think both of ours too. TCU did beat Houston in the one game they played each other, but I think that was at home and it was by one. And I think Houston's just such a juggernaut, and TCU's done everything in. At this point, especially if they beat OU to comfortably make the tournament. So I think this is where their luck runs out and Houston beats them in this one.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with you there. Houston's just so hot right now. It's hard to pick, any team over them. So I'm going Houston there.
Cool. And then we got Texas, Iowa State here. I think the Iowa State defense is legit. I know it doesn't travel as much at outside of home that it has before, but I think it's enough to get past a Texas team that is hot. So I think Texas, like if you're picking a higher seed to win the tournament, Texas might be your best bet in this one. But I think it runs out at Iowa State.
Yeah, I you're probably right. What was there? What happened to them? And they played. All right. So they beat Texas. Yeah, I'm probably going to go Iowa State here. I'll go Iowa State.
Cool, and then we got what, Kansas Baylor. This is a fun one. This is just a matter. I think Langston Love should be back for the tournament. The two teams that have probably have the two most talent, but also the weakest amount of depth. So I'm gonna rock with Baylor here, just because I think they've been more consistent and a better team. They're also hot at the right time, so I'm gonna advance them.
Yeah, I'm gonna go Baylor. I'm gonna go Baylor as well for all the reasons you just said. I just trust them more right now.
Cool. And then we got, or I got BYU Houston, you got Tech Houston. So I think Houston gets past BYU. Houston is just such a juggernaut, and I think they're going to be super tough to beat.
Yeah, I'm taking Houston over Texas Tech. They're just, yeah, it's it I don't feel like I need to justify myself anymore with Houston. They're just really good. Simply, they're just very good. I'll take Houston.
Cool. And then we both got Iowa State Baylor, right? God, this is such a tough one. I think I am gonna ride with Baylor. I just think I worry about the Iowa State defense traveling enough to beat a good Baylor team, because I think Baylor is better than Kansas. So, yeah, I'm gonna go Baylor Houston finals.
I'll go just to switch it up. I'll go Iowa State. I still trust them a lot. They obviously a bad loss to close out the year, but that team's still for real. And I think they them and Baylor, I mean them and Houston end up in the finals. And I guess is that 1 and 2 in the conference?
Yeah,
So
or yeah, Iowa State and
that'd be
Houston.
pretty boring of me, but I am gonna go ISU Houston in the finals.
Okay, so my final, Houston Baylor. I think it's gonna be a great game. Baylor's offense, Houston defense. It's about as lines up as juggernaut against juggernaut as it gets. Probably the top offense in the Big 12 versus top defense. I'm just gonna ride with Houston. I've been riding with them all year. I do think they're a tier above any other team in the Big 12, so I'm gonna have to go chalk, I guess, there and go with Houston in my champ.
Yeah,
As boring as it is.
they're the best team in the conference by far. It's the right pick, but just to switch it up. I'll go Iowa State. Coming off of a bad loss, I think they get it together before the tournament. They go on a run here and they get a really nice win over Houston in the championship. So I'll go Iowa State winning the conference championship this year.
Okay, we got a little different picks here. It's gonna be fun to figure it out, but
Yeah. I mean,
let's get
to be fair, I think it's Houston, but I think just for fun, I'll go Iowa State and I think they could do it. They're good.
awesome. Well, let's get Jamie on and talk some more TCU.
Yeah, we gotta go get Jamie. All right, we'll be back.
There it is. Okay, now on the Frog Fever Pod, we have a special guest, Jamie Plunkett. He covers TCU for Horned Frog Blitz and 247 Sports. You might know him as Frog Preacher on X. He has his own podcast, Frog Insider, with Dave Campbell's Texas Football, and he's an 09 TCU grad. So, Jamie, this is a pleasure having you on, and I'm excited to talk some ball.
Yeah, man, I appreciate the invitation. Always happy to chat about TCU with fellow fans. It's pretty good.
Yeah. So I just want to start it off here. TCU went 1-1 last week and are coming off their first real bad loss of the season at UCF. Right now, it's a lot of talk about tournament bubble and how far they end. After the loss against UCF, where do you see TCU as it falls for the NCAA tournament?
I think they're still pretty squarely in. You look at their overall resume, 9 wins in the Big 12, 20 wins on the season. I think those are nice benchmarks to look at when you're talking about whether a team is in or out. And then you also look at their net and their KenPom, both kind of there in the 30s, 40s, depending on which one you're looking at. They're pretty squarely in the mix to not only be in the tournament, but to not have to go through the play-in games in Dayton. That can change, right? There's a lot of
Yeah.
basketball to be played between now and Sunday, but I think that right now TCU fans should bank on being in the NCAA tournament for the third year in a row, which, as you guys know, first time that's ever happened in program history.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's massive. Yeah, so they go 1-1. Went over West Virginia, lost at UCF, like you mentioned, or to UCF. I guess getting into the West Virginia game, how much can we take away from that? I mean, this is a team they were supposed to beat, and they did beat. Emmanuel Miller, 21 points. He's been amazing. Micah and Jameer were both good as well. Chuck was good off the bench. Following the week they had, I guess 2 weeks ago now, this is a win they needed. I'm curious what you guys think. Like, how much do we look at this West Virginia win, if at all, when it comes to, I guess, Frog fans feeling better about the team?
Well, it's nice to score 93 points in a conference game. That'll make you feel good for a couple of days. But I mean, they didn't play great defense that day. I think Dixon called them out for their defense after that performance. And we saw a continuation of bad defense in the final game of the year against UCF in Fort Worth. So it's always nice to get a conference win. That win specifically solidified the fact that TCU would be at least 500 in conference play, which is not a bad thing. But the reality of the situation is that I don't know that West Virginia is necessarily a team that you use as a benchmark for progress this year because of all of the turmoil that program has undergone in the last 12 months. So, you know, again, it's a good win. You scored 93 points. You looked good on offense, but defensively there were some of the same flaws that we've seen from this team all season that West Virginia was able to expose as well. I mean, Jesse Edwards had what, 29, 31 points somewhere around there, almost had a double double with rebounds. I think he did have a double double. Sure. They were without Ernest Uday, but they've been getting killed by big men with some skill pretty consistently this year. So you saw some of the same flaws. It was nice to see a good win from the Frogs. Obviously, first win up in Morgantown was a big one too.
Yeah, and especially with the last game, for sure, the fans have been kind of restless, I would say, in calling people out. And it's just been a fun time on X right now. But where do you look at, like, specifically at Jamie Dixon, and do you think he's lived up to his success this year? Because me personally, I don't know. I felt like with what this program was before he came here, he's built it gradually higher and higher to where making three straight NCAA tournaments would be a massive success. But what's your take on the whole thing?
Yeah, I think there are maybe two or three different conversations happening at the same time, and everybody thinks it's one conversation, which makes it a challenge to kind of parse through what people are actually upset about. Because when you're talking about TCU basketball, Jamie Dixon has gotten this program to a place that it has quite literally never been before. And I mean that both as a player when he was here in the mid-80s and now as the head coach. Pretty much every single high point, high watermark for TCU basketball includes Jamie Dixon in some capacity. And you have to take that into account when you're having the rest of the conversation, because I think that it's totally appropriate to acknowledge that right now TCU is at the highest point it's ever been in a basketball program. Yeah, it's not the highest point that you'd like to see it at, but for where TCU basketball has been, it's the highest point in program history. And I think that there are some legitimate complaints and concerns about the style of basketball that is being played, about whether or not this is the ceiling. But those are two parts of a conversation, almost two separate conversations altogether. And when you have one part of the conversation without the other part of the conversation, I think you lose some important context. And I've seen a lot of that from fans on social media this season, and on our message board over at HFB as well. It's fair to ask the question, is this the ceiling? I think it's unfair to say, if this is the ceiling, well, then we just got to move on right now. Because I think that there's value in consistency, and Jamie Dixon has provided that and shown what that value can look like over the past 8 seasons. There are still milestones to achieve, like finishing over 500 in Big 12 play would be a pretty big milestone. Advancing past weekend one in the NCAA tournament is another big milestone that he still needs to check off. But the fact that that is the point in which we're at the conversation now, that's the bar. is a testament to what he's done in the 8 years as a head coach. And you think about what he's done on the recruiting trail, not only in the transfer portal, where we've seen guys like Eman and Ball come in and have huge impacts. Guys this year, Jameer and Avery have been up and down. Tennyson's been up and down, but it's a really strong, experienced squad because of what they've done in the transfer portal. And they've just brought in the highest rated high school recruiting class of all time for TCU. And I don't think that can be overlooked either, because when you talk about wanting to raise the bar of where the program is going to advance come tournament time, you also have to talk about the bar that's being raised from a recruiting standard. And Jamie Dixon is checking that box right now. So it's safe to assume that, hey, if we're continuing to bring in better and better talent into the program, not just one or two guys like Desmond Bain or Mike Miles, but consistently across the board from a depth perception, then there's, you know, reason to believe that they will also start to accomplish some of these things that they have yet to accomplish when it comes to, you know, gameplay on the court.
Yeah. Yeah. You talked about like some of the stuff that the style of play, for one thing, like this year, certainly, and in years past, defense has not been something this team can kind of hang their hat on. And we saw that against West Virginia. We saw that against UCF. Darius Johnson had 33 against TCU on Saturday. Knowing what this team is defensively, is this a year that you could see TCU getting to the second weekend? And I know this is all very matchup dependent, but with the defense they have and with the offense that at times is really explosive and a really, you know, good unit, is this a season you could see them advancing that second weekend?
Maybe. I think you're right in that it's matchup dependent. It really depends on which TCU shows up, to be completely honest. If it's the TCU from mid-January, then yeah, I think there's a really good opportunity to move on past weekend one in the tournament. If it's the TCU team we've seen over the past 2 or 3 weeks, probably not. Honestly, I mean, I think we're looking at them being a 10 seed at this point. That's kind of what they're locked into. Unless some things go wrong, then they're probably a different seed. But, I think I saw a projection the other day where they'd be at the 10-7 game against Gonzaga, feeding into a 2 seed against Arizona. I don't know if they advance even one win in that scenario. You could call it a revenge tour if you wanted for TCU, but I don't know. You know, I think that this team has the talent top to bottom to be competitive no matter who they match up against in tournament play. But I have yet to see consistently someone step up for this team when they need someone to step up. There have been moments where it's been Tennyson, where it's been Eman, where it's been Jameer, but there has not been that consistent guy this season. And I think there are moments late in games where that has been a challenge for them to overcome, because some of these dudes who can go get you 20 are looking around. It's like, all right, was it my night or is it somebody else's night? And you can't have that kind of indecision late in games or it's going to really come back to haunt you. And we've seen that a few times already this year. So it really depends on which team shows up. It obviously is matchup dependent as well, but the good news is that you've got Ernest Udeh back. He looked pretty healthy against UCF. He gave you, I think, 24 really good minutes. And that's going to be really helpful to this front court moving forward. So it's hard to say right now, but I do think that if they can figure out some of the things that they've been dealing with the past 2-3 weeks, really, then they're going to be a tough out in the tournament.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a super interesting conversation for sure that I've been going back and forth on this year about who's the guy to close it out. Emmanuel Miller's obviously been the best player consistently throughout the year, but what do you think about his ability to create shots on his own? And do you think they should like even play through him a little bit more?
Yeah, so to the first part on his ability to create shots for himself, I think if you give him the ball on the baseline, low block, or by the free throw area, he's shown over the last 3 years the development and being able to create his own shot, especially with that little baby hook that he's got, his ability to go up strong against guys who have bigger bodies than him, backing down guards on the baseline, which we've seen him do time and time again. He's able to create his own shot in that way. a spot up shooter as well from the perimeter. He's obviously added that to his bag as well. Is he a guy that you run the offense through a little bit more? Yeah, I think you absolutely do, because he's got a pretty multifaceted scoring set at this point in his career, and he's a capable passer. I think the biggest issue that we've seen with TCU's offense, especially in half court sets, and this goes back to the time Jamie Dixon stepped foot on campus, really, is a lot of times the ball can get stuck on the perimeter and you're just seeing a lot of perimeter passing back and forth. And there's none of that entry into the paint that really actually challenges the structure of a defense. And so if you were working through him on the low block a little bit more, I think you'd see more open opportunities for threes. And then you'd also see him create and score a little bit more as well.
So I want to get in a little bit into the Oklahoma game in the tournament, round one, or I guess it would be round two technically, overall, but TCU's first game will be against Oklahoma on Wednesday. And TCU beat Oklahoma earlier in the season. I like this matchup for TCU. I think they match up pretty well. And there's, you know, Nick and I talked about this earlier. There's some, you know, who knows if they're true, but there are these rumors on Twitter about Porter Moser. So what do you think about this matchup for TCU? How do they win this game? And what would it look like if they did not win this game? What would happen?
I like that you brought up Porter Moser and the DePaul rumors, because there's nothing worse for a team than not knowing if their head coach is going or leaving or staying or leaving right around this time of year. It's always really hard. TCU fans remember that from, you know, 3 or 4 years ago when the UCLA rumors and Dixon got stirred up. But as far as the matchup is concerned, I think that anytime you play a team twice in the same year, it's going to be hard to win that game twice. You look at what TCU did against Tech and Baylor the first time they played those teams versus what happened in round two in both of those games. And you saw Tech and Baylor make some really good adjustments on TCU, especially Baylor defensively, that threw TCU for a loop. Baylor's zone defense was absolutely just dastardly against what TCU was trying to do offensively in that second match. But when it comes to Oklahoma, I mean, they're slumping similar to TCU is, right? They've lost three out of their last four, just like TCU. They just dropped a really close game to Texas to finish their season. And I wonder if they're also kind of having the same conversation right now is, well, gosh, you get a win and then anything can happen against Houston on Thursday. I like this matchup for TCU because I think that they have superior depth to Oklahoma. I think that the guard play holistically, when it's at its best, is better than the guard play Oklahoma can provide. Although I do think Oklahoma has maybe the best overall guard in that matchup with Pop Isaacs. I think too, Javian McCollum has stepped up his game pretty impressively as of late. He's shooting over 94% from the free throw line as well, which if you're in a close game late, that's a guy you love to have on your roster. I think that there's going to be paint opportunity for TCU in this game. I think they're going to be able to move the ball inside and score a little bit more. And they're going to be able to play off of what is OU's real strength, which is 3-point defense. You know, they're one of the best perimeter defending teams in the country. So you can't maybe bank on the fact that you've hit some pretty good 3-point percentage numbers over the last three or four games, despite losing a couple. If you're TCU, I mean, you look at the first half against BYU, they shot the lights out from three. You look at the game against West Virginia and the first half against UCF, the 3-point shooting was really top tier. You're not going to be able to rely on that against Oklahoma necessarily. So maybe it's time to get back to that bread and butter, like we were talking about, of let's get the ball inside, guards penetrate and dish it out, work it through some of your big men a little bit more and be a little bit more intentional with the ball offensively. I do think that TCU will win this game. Because I think that, like I said, they've got superior depth to OU, but anything can happen in the Big 12, man, as we've seen this season.
Yeah, you talk about the depth too, and oftentimes when it gets to postseason play, coaches like to shorten the rotation a little bit. Do you anticipate Jamie doing that with only playing a couple guys off the bench, or have enough guys proven that he can go 10 deep like he's been going all year?
I think it depends on a couple different things. I would not be surprised, just because of how he's been playing lately, if we saw a few fewer minutes for Avery Anderson. He's really struggled as of late. Turnovers have been a problem. He's not scoring. And like you said, when it comes down to clutch moments, you got to have your best guys out there on the court. And I think right now, from a guard perspective, that's Jameer and Trey. From the front court, I think it really depends on what you can get from Ernest, because if he's healthy and he's a full go, then he is kind of an X factor for you, especially on defense and rebounding wise, which means that Mostafa's probably the odd man out at the five, especially when you want to go small with Jacoby so frequently like they've been doing. Ernest is probably the odd man out in that equation, just because he isn't as well-rounded of a scorer as Xavier Cork. So I think those are the two guys who are probably most at risk for losing some minutes come tournament time. But realistically, I would not be surprised to see TCU continue to run eight, maybe even nine deep, just because that's what they're used to this season. And when they were clicking, that's what was working for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, overall in the Big 12, obviously such a deep conference. If we take out the top, we'll say top four teams that get those buys, what's kind of a sleeper team for you that you could see making a run all the way to the final game? Maybe not necessarily winning it, but a team that could make some noise, a higher seeded team.
Outside of the top four?
Yeah, yeah.
Let's see here. Let me pull up the bracket really quick because I don't have it committed to memory yet. But I know that a team that I really like, and this isn't just because of what I saw from them against TCU, but of you know how they played at Iowa State as well, even though they ended up losing that game, is BYU. I think that they can score in bunches in a way that is so different from most other Big 12 teams with how well they shoot the three. I think they've got one of the best energy guys, and now obviously I'm going to forget his name in this very moment, but they've got some of the best energy guys that I've seen in conference play this year, and I think that they have some of that depth to really compete if a couple guys get in foul trouble. So I like BYU a lot. You know, I think it's really hard in this format though to go on a big run if you don't have at least one bye. And I don't know that either TCU or Oklahoma is going to get by Houston. They're playing at an insane level right now. And I think you could probably say the same for Iowa State at this point. So it's tough to pick someone out of the top four to go on a run and win it because there's such a huge advantage. But if I had to say somebody, I'd probably say BYU.
And I want to talk about the Big 12 awards were announced yesterday too. And three TCU guys were honored. Eman, second team, Micah and Jameer were honorable mentions, but do you have any like snubs from a first team or even coach of the year, player of the year, anything like that, that you, or did you like it, what the coaches did in this one?
I thought the coaches pretty much got it right. I think Shed had such a phenomenal year for Houston that it was hard to deny him Big 12 player of the year. It's tough, I think, to give him both of those major awards, but he kind of earned it, especially when you think of some of the other guys like Dickinson faded late. So you're probably not going to give him Big 12 player of the year. He was also banged up a little bit. McCullough was way too banged up to get it. None of the Baylor guys really stood above anybody else on their own roster to kind of say they're the dude to go and earn it. So I'm cool with Shed getting it. Lipsy was, I think, a phenomenal addition to the first team because he just did so much for Iowa State this year. That was really awesome to see. I was a little surprised that there were no Baylor guys on the first team. I thought maybe Jacoby Walter would get in there instead of Dylan Disu, but Disu was just, when he got healthy for Texas, they were a completely different program, and TCU experienced that firsthand in Fort Worth this year. So no real beef with what the Big 12 decided to do from an award standpoint this year. And you know, with Kelvin Sampson, first year team coming in and winning the whole dang thing, you got to give him the nod in that regard as well. So it would have been nice to see E-Man get back up there in the first team like he was in the preseason, but I think there were just stretches this year where he wasn't as impactful as maybe TCU people were hoping he would be. And so that maybe worked a little bit against him, especially losing three out of the last four, something like that.
Mm-hmm. Obviously you've covered a lot of TCU teams, and like you said, this is probably the third team in a row that will make the tournament. Compared to those other two teams that you saw and you covered, how does this team rank in terms of its potential ability to go farther than we've seen them go before?
It's a good question. I think those other teams had that guy on yes. them. You know, you're talking about the sixth seed that lost to Syracuse in the first round, which I think was probably TCU's most talented team that they've had. Mm-hmm. I mean, they had two or three guys that you could call that guy at any given moment. Obviously, the last 2 years with Mike Miles, he was the dude. He was going to have the ball late. Everybody knew it, and it didn't matter most of the time unless he's getting fouled without a call against Arizona. And this year, I think that's my biggest hang up with this team. And I've talked about it with Melissa on our show as well, is they just don't know who it's going to be in the final 4 minutes of a basketball game. And there are days where when you walk into the arena, you've just got to know, all right, when it comes down to it, this is going to be the dude. And I'm going to do my best to make sure that he has every opportunity he has to get us where we're trying to go. So I think that there's, like I said earlier, there's a lot of guys on this roster that are capable. I think that this team as a whole is really capable of making a run, but I wouldn't put money on it based on what I've seen from this program the last 2 weeks or so.
Yeah.
Which is kind of it's kind of a downer thing to say. I know, like, we're entering tournament time. Everybody loves March, but I got to see it, and I haven't, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I want to talk about the future a little bit too, because with this team having 10 seniors, there's going to be a big turnover for next year, as we've seen a lot of turnover the past couple of years. But I feel like next year is a little bit different in the sense that we have two freshmen redshirting, and I've heard that Jace and both Isaiah are bought in and staying next year. And then also with the four freshmen coming in, which is a lot more than we've seen in recent years, do you anticipate next year being a little bit less competitive and more developing young guys and playing young guys? And obviously Jamie's going to have a lot of transfers as well, but do you anticipate next year taking a little bit of a dip in terms of competitiveness?
I think it depends on who they get in the portal. Obviously, you're going to take fewer guys from the portal next year because you just listed – essentially, they're bringing six back, so you've got seven scholarships to play with.
And maybe, who knows the exact years, too.
Right. I mean, so not to get too far into the weeds here, but like X and Isam both technically could come back.
Yeah. Kobe, you know, too, right?
Kobe, I think, could. PV technically could. I don't think he will. Like, you could get really into the weeds with it, but I think we're going to see maybe four scholarship spots for transfer guys next year. So there's going to be a premium on that from a TCU standpoint. And we've seen that they're capable of going and getting top end talent out of the transfer portal. Next year, it's going to be really important to have a 100% hit rate on that, essentially, because you're right, Nick, they're going to have to rely on Jace at times. They're probably going to rely on Isaiah Manning at times. I don't know how much a guy like David Punch is going to come in and play as a true freshman, but he and Micah Robinson, I think, probably have the best chance of doing that out of the four guys that they signed in this high school recruiting cycle. But, you know, I think getting a true point guard is going to be a major priority out of the transfer portal this offseason. And how TCU is able to address that position specifically will go a long way to telling us what kind of season they're in for next year. Obviously, you've got a great building block in Ernest Uday, just 19 years old right now, and you can assume he's going to take a step forward next season, but there are a lot of question marks on this roster in 2024-25.
Yeah, and he's gotten a lot better and better even this year, just being such an impactful player. But again, coming back to this team, I think at the start of the year there was kind of mixed expectations. It's probably like evened out in terms of we've started a little bit on a bubble team with so many different transfers, and we've kind of just ended up there. But what do you see as success for this team? Like, if they have a first round exit, is it a failure if they have a win, you know, and they don't make the Sweet 16, it's not a successful year? What do you see as success in this tournament?
I think this kind of goes back to the conversation we were having earlier about context too, because I think that making the tournament for a third year in a row and doing that for the first time in program history is an important milestone to acknowledge. I will also completely understand when people say that they would be disappointed with a one and done in the tournament this year or not making it out of the first weekend. Both things can be true at the same time, which I think is hard for folks to grasp at times. But I picked TCU to be fifth in the two preseason polls I did. I did one for 24/7. I did one for The Athletic, and I put TCU fifth in both. Behind the team I missed on the most this year was Texas. I think if DCU had been healthy, I would have been a little bit closer there. But I had Houston, Kansas, Baylor, and Texas in some order. I can't remember. Ahead of TCU fifth. I think Iowa State was sixth. And then just the rest of folks. And so seeing them come into the Big 12 tournament as an eight seed is already, I think, missing kind of what my expectations were for them at the beginning of the year, because I thought that this would be the year that they finally got above 500 in conference play. I really believe that the depth on this team would kind of carry them, even if they suffered an injury or something like that, which we saw that happen. Things didn't get carried quite as they should have at times. And things just never gelled defensively like I expected them to from a Jamie Dixon squad. That being said, I don't think it's necessarily, I don't think we'd necessarily consider it a disappointing season for TCU to get eliminated in the round of 32 again. I think that it's appropriate to carry higher expectations moving forward. But I think that anytime you're one of the last 64 in the conversation or the last 32 in the conversation out of, you know, a Division I that has over 350 some odd basketball programs in it, and you're playing in the best conference in the country, I don't think that that's necessarily a disappointment. That's you know, one man's opinion.
Yeah. And I want to get a little bit more back, because you've obviously covered TCU for a long time now and covered TCU basketball and seen its growth.
You guys have said that a couple times now, and I appreciate it. It also makes me feel super old, but
I'm just brand new to the whole thing, so I'm trying to figure it out.
It's all good.
But we've seen so many good players like your D Baines, your Mikes, you know, just going on and on. You know, K Rich, all these guys. What is the best player you've seen at TCU?
Gosh, okay. There's the right answer, and then there's the guy I loved watching play the most answer. So the right answer is Desmond Bain. And just watching his development over 4 years at TCU was such a blast, such a joy, right? Because, like, he came in as a zero-star kid, like one or two other Division I offers in all of college basketball, takes a chance on Jamie Dixon as much as Jamie Dixon takes a chance on him, and it just clicked from day one. The shot he hit against Kansas in the Big 12 tournament his freshman year, to the big three he drained as a junior to beat Baylor and Fort Worth for the first time in a long time, to, you know, just kind of the legacy that he has left. Guy who left with a degree in his hand and wants to make an impact on the world doing youth advocacy. Also, you know, a $200 million contract with the Grizzlies this past offseason. Like, the guy has done everything to the best of his ability. He's worked harder than anybody else his entire life. And to see him accomplish the things that he's accomplished is just really, really cool. And to know that he holds that TCU degree is really special as well. The dog that I loved watching more than anybody else is Kian Anderson. That guy was so much fun to watch. He was on some hilariously bad TCU basketball teams, and it just didn't seem to like faze him at all. He went out every single day and played as hard as he possibly could. He made the guys around him better. He's, you know, one of the best players, I think, from a guard standpoint that TCU has seen in kind of their modern era of basketball. And he just kind of was a relentless, joyful basketball player who, you know, I at least from an outsider's perspective, from someone who covered the team perspective, never really had a bad day. And I think that when you're putting that in the context of what TCU basketball was at that point in time, it's pretty impressive to not have any or many bad days in that era of TCU hoops. So Kian Anderson is one of my favorite players of all time from TCU.
That's awesome. Well, I mean, this interview has been awesome. We thank you again for coming on. This is big for us. We don't want to take too much of your time, but if I had one more question, I want to talk about a little bit of what ifs, because
sure.
At least in my short 3 years of being a fan, I like to think of last year, like, what if Eddie Lampkin was healthy against the Gonzaga game? And you mentioned like that six seed team that lost to Syracuse. Like, what if they got a different draw? But do you have your own what if different stories happening that would have elevated TCU basketball to a different level or changed how things happened?
Yeah, hang on
The
one
foul
second. I need
call, the
to.
Mike Miles,
Yeah, I mean the foul call. I
the
don't.
Phantom, no foul, no call.
Or if Jamie Dixon
Yeah.
went to UCLA, like all these different stuff.
Oh, yeah.
That, I mean, that would have changed it for sure. Here's one though that I think. So there was a guy a couple years ago, I guess last year before the offseason, who was down to TCU in another school, high school recruit from DFW, who, if he had ended up picking TCU and he was on that team last season, I just really wonder what things would have been like. And I'm talking about Anthony Black
Yeah, I was thinking that too. Yeah.
because
Yeah.
he was down to TCU in Arkansas, obviously ended up
Yeah.
picking the Hogs, had a great season with them, drafted in the first round by the Magic now,
Magic, yeah.
and is in the NBA. But I can't help but think, like, if TCU's rocking with Anthony Black on that team last year, what is the ceiling for that guard unit when you're talking about Mike and Anthony and Damian? Now, obviously there's other stuff involved there about, you know, if certain guys were back, would he be here? If they're back, he obviously went somewhere else, you know, but just
Yeah.
Anthony Black on last year's basketball team would have been an absolute blast to watch.
Yeah.
Yeah. I
I remember
followed that
watching that
recruitment a little bit.
commitment. Yeah.
Yeah. How close? So it was down at TCU in Arkansas. How close was it? Close? Did TCU have a shot there at the end, or?
Yeah, I think they were in the I think they were in the mix. I think part of the kind of decision on Anthony's part was, what was Mike Miles going to do? You know, because he had declared for the draft, he kind of put some feelers out there and then ended up coming back. And, you know, with Anthony wanting to play point guard and Mike being a point guard, I don't know that there was necessarily room for
Yeah.
both. But I, you know, I'm a guy who likes to think, hey, they could have figured it out, right? But
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it worked out in both guys' best interests in the end, and so you can't blame either of them for the decisions that they made.
Yeah, for
Yeah,
sure.
no, for sure. That Hogs team had a ton of guards too. That was a fun team. And yeah, I remember watching that recruit my freshman year that spring. Like, I think Gonzaga was in the mix too a little bit, but
Yeah, I remember
that would have
that.
been fun for sure. And that might have been one of the highest draft picks of TCU all time too. So that would have been fun. But we don't want to take too much of your time. This has been great. Thank you again.
Of
Um,
course. Thank
we'd
you,
love to
Jamie.
have you back on anytime.
Yeah,
That's
I've been reading your stuff for a long time, so it's super cool to finally meet you and talk to you. It's awesome.
Yeah, it's been great, fellas. Anytime you want me on, I'll hop on. Awesome.
Appreciate
Thank
it.
you. All right,
You're
guys.
the
Have fun.
man.
Have fun in KC.
We
Thank
will
you.
for sure. Have a good one.
All right, peace.
All right, that was Jamie Plunkett on with us to talk TCU basketball. Again, we appreciate him coming on a lot. It's super fun that we've gotten to talk to so many people that are so plugged into TCU and really do know what they're talking about. So it's cool to have him on, and we definitely appreciate it. Want to say thank you to the listener as well. Thank you for tuning in once again. We're having a lot of fun. It's about to get really good. We'll both be in KC for a little bit. I'm not sure exactly the days I'll be there, but I'll be down there. I know Nick will be down there a little bit too. So keep your eyes out for maybe some bonus episodes. We'll see what
Ooh,
happens. But a fun,
maybe.
a fun, a fun week ahead, a fun month ahead. AB, Antonio
Yeah.
Brown might join the pod. We don't know. But yeah, thanks for tuning in. I guess it's going to be a fun week, so stick around.
Yeah.
My name is Davis Wilson. That's Nick Giromani, as always, my co-host. And we'll see you next week.
Have a good one.
Sick, sick, sick.